Indeed, the very name of the party, National Socialist German Workers' Party, indicated this attempt to cross the great divides of German political life. National, indicating a right-wing movement. Socialist, left. German, again, on the right. Workers, on the left. A party that didn't fit the usual cleavage lines of German politics. In 1920, he would draft the so-called 25 points, which would become the official program of the NSDAP. And that program would not change throughout the 1920s and into the early 1930s. The party was rabidly anti-Marxist, seeing in Marxism one of the great banes of modern industrial society. But at the same time, it was also anti-capitalist, anti-big business. So it combined two of these features of the modern ideological debate. It called for the establishment of a corporatist economic order that would be similar, in fact, to what Mussolini would achieve in Italy. It was nationalistic and expansionist, calling for the establishment of, or the creation of Lebensraum, or living space, in the East. The German population was growing. It needed space to expand. This Lebensraum, or living space, was to be acquired in the East. And that would ultimately mean, implied in the program, war against either the successor states of Poland and Czechoslovakia, but also possibly against the Soviet Union. The program of the party was also anti-Semitic, rabidly anti-Semitic, arguing that Jews could not be people's comrades, could not be ever be real members of this German national community, of a Volksgemeinschaft, a people's community, which the National Socialists would hold up as their social goal. The point of National Socialists' social ethics, its social vision, was to create a classless Volksgemeinschaft, or people's community. It would not be classless in the Marxist sense of the term, but rather it would be based on German ethnicity, in fact, on race. Until 1923, the NSDAP was little known outside of Bavaria, in fact, hardly known outside of Munich. But 1923, this great climactic year of the hyperinflation, would change all that and catapult Hitler and his party into the national spotlight. In November 23, Hitler led his party in a conspiracy to overthrow the Bavarian government, and then he hoped to march on Berlin, in many respects an echo of Mussolini's march on Rome in the previous year. The Beer Hall Putsch was an absolute fiasco, a disaster from every point of view. Not only had the Nazis and their allies failed to overthrow the Bavarian government, the coup had ended in ignominy, the leaders of the coup arrested, a number of them killed in a confrontation with the Bavarian military authorities. But Hitler would turn his trial for treason in the spring of 1924 into a great public relations victory. While the other members of this conspiracy on trial for treason pleaded not guilty, Hitler took a different tact. Defending himself, he rose in the courtroom in Munich with the national press assembled and gave an oration in which he used his considerable speaking skills, his oratorical ability to proclaim his commitment to the reestablishment of German honor, German power, and so on. If, he said, it is treason to wish to restore Germany to its rightful place in the community of nations, then I'm guilty. If wanting to reestablish the German army so unfairly banned by the Treaty of Versailles, then I'm guilty. If overthrowing the Treaty of Versailles is treasonous, then indeed I am guilty. On and on in very powerful terms, so impressive, in fact, that the state prosecution suggested at the conclusion of the trial that Hitler be given the minimum sentence for attempting to overthrow the legitimate government of Germany.